Welcome to the Talent Smart Podcast. Our intention in each episode is to interview interesting and inspiring people who will offer their insights into their areas of expertise. We want to explore how technology and business can improve and enhance the world. We're always keen to hear from you and let us know what topics you'd like to hear us cover in future episodes. Also, if you'd like to take part, please let us know. We're always looking for interesting and inspiring people to interview. Speak soon. Now, Jason is the founder and CPO of Jam7. He's worked with some of the globe's leading brands, Barclays, Microsoft, Sony, Travelport, and now the founder of Jam7. They're growth agents, customer-centric, data-driven, outcome-focused technologists. They use AI every day to automate away the repetitive non-value-adding activities and deliver game-changing value for money for their clients. And we'll chat with Jason a little bit further about that Jam7 a little bit. But Jason, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, it's a delight to spend some time with you, and I really appreciate it. I don't know how busy you are. AI is obviously central to what you do on a day-to-day basis. And one thing we talked about before you agreed to a podcast with us is the whole area of diversity and inclusion. So how can AI be leveraged for diversity and inclusion?
Yeah, so I think, AI gets a bad rap by at least some people, right? We've got the sort of true believers, which I probably fall into that category. And then we have the kind of the sort of disbelievers. And I think the gray area in the middle is still trying to find what's the truth out there, right? A lot of these very smart large language models have been trained on data off the internet. And the internet is a collection of human beings, and human beings have their own cognitive biases and their own biases that they've been brought up with as kids. And all of that is mixed into these large language models. So they're kind of the best and the worst of humanity, if you like. And I think that, as a person that's a strong believer in the value of diversity in teams, I think that, recognizing that these large language models are built out of, the combined knowledge of people that's out there on the internet, they have a lot of good and potentially a few problems along the way that they can bring to businesses if they're used effectively. And in my own case, as a dyslexic person with neurodiversity, which, when I was at school, that was seen as a big problem because I was behind on my English. In recent years, I've kind of considered that to be a little bit more of a superpower, where, that ability to, as I describe it, think horizontally rather than vertically, means that you see those kind of opportunities that maybe don't exist in other people's minds where they don't have that kind of slightly different wired brain, if that makes sense.
No, definitely that makes sense. And funny enough, we've got a great podcast episode with Sabrina Mansaria, where she runs a thing called Singular from Paris, and it's all about exactly the neurodiversity area, but she didn't touch too much in the AI bit. So how can AI be leveraged for this area? How can AI affect positively, sort of a DE&I policy within a business?
Yeah, so I mean, in my case, I've been using AI now for quite a while. I did an MIT course where I kind of genned up on this stuff about 3.5 years ago now. And so was using ChatGPT 2.0 and playing with some of these things before they became sort of super popular as they have done. And for me, it was very liberating because clearly I always struggled with putting out sort of well-written English. And by collaborating with one of these agents and being able to, pass ideas back and forth, I was able to get my ideas to be represented and well-written, in a way that made me feel much more empowered than maybe it had traditionally. And yes, spell checkers have been around for a good long while, and I've been, a great user of them, but they are not infallible. As I have many amusing stories from my background in various businesses where, words have been transposed. So it spelt them correctly, but it wasn't the word that I thought it was. I'm not going to share those stories right now, but there are some very amusing ones. And it's kind of looking back, that doesn't happen so much with these large language models because they have more of that sort of understanding of what the individual words mean, and therefore they're able to look at the context that the rest of the sentence has been constructed around. So for me personally, I found them very liberating. My business partner, Mitchell Fellman, he has AHAD, and he finds that, you know, focus is very hard for him, and he's kind of all over the place, and again, a very active mind. And he finds the models to be really helpful in terms of helping him brainstorm, but also helping him focus in on the things that he needs to get done as well. So, you know, I think that they are empowering for people that choose to use them in that way, and for people that have taken the time to understand how to get the most out of them as well. You know, I see a lot of people that say, oh, I used it a little bit, and they, you know, it just doesn't give quality output. Well, quality input is required for quality output. And a lot of the time I see, you know, very poorly written prompts, people that don't understand this idea of chain of reasoning prompts to get more out of the models, not necessarily giving examples to the prompt for the kind of output that you want or the kind of format you want back. When you do those things, you get a very significantly better quality output. And if you then ask the model to critique its own output and then use those critiques to improve what you get even better output as well. So, you know, I think it's really like any business tool. You know, we've got people that know how to put Excel together and put some basic things in, and then we've got people that know how to use macros and can pretty much get it to do, you know, almost, you know, magical things. It's about the time you invest in the time in your business productivity apps. And let's be honest, in a world where SaaS products have exploded and every business seems to have hundreds of them, you know, it's those businesses that take the time to actually get their people to learn and use those fully that get the most value out of them, rather than people that sort of, you know, hire a new person and say, here's a product, knock yourself out, and expect people to sort of become experts in it without some guidance or training.
And with that, so what do business and technology leaders going forward, what kind of things do they need to consider when maybe implementing or allowing their staff, if that's the right phraseology, encouraging people to use AI tools? What do they need to consider?
Yeah, so I mean, there are ethical considerations. These models are not infallible. But a lot of that same guidance is the same guidance that you give to any employee, right? It's like having responsibility for the kinds of things that people post in social media, right? You know, I've seen people recently having looked and looking to recruit some people where you go and look at some people's social media posts and you exclude them from the interviewing process because you wouldn't want that kind of view to be commonly held within in the organization that you're representing, right? Because ultimately you hire for the values of the people. Skills can be taught, but really it's the way that you bond with those people, whether they have the right mindset, the right values ultimately. In that same way, business leaders need to really be very careful about how they use these tools and how they consider them, right? One thing that I think is going to change dramatically is that the ability to create large amounts of content is suddenly unlocked for the good and bad. So the risk here is that we will just see a proliferation of mediocre content that has not been well thought through, well considered. You know, it hasn't been written with the mind of addressing a customer's problem or helping a customer understand an issue they may have. So in that new world, we need to consider more carefully than ever the things that we choose to create content around. And of course, these large language models can create content that is customer facing, but also is internally facing as well. And, you know, again, using these models to critique a business plan, using these models to critique a marketing plan, you know, these kinds of things, the models can actually be pretty good at. And so, you know, I encourage people, and the way that we set up the growth agents for our clients is we actually set them up on email addresses so that people think about them more like emailing a person, right? And we really want people to think less about the instant response and more about, especially where we have multiple agents that communicate with each other to get a job done and then pass the result back. So just as people take a few days to get something done, when you use agents more in this sort of think of it as a mesh of agents working together in the background, you need to consider things taking a little bit longer, but you may have an agent that's planning the work out and another agent that's writing it and another agent that's doing something. And when you get that result back, it's had those considered opinions of those agents that have all been trained to do their specific job in a certain way. So it's a very, very empowering technology. And, you know, I mean, I've been around for 30 odd years in my working life now. I was around when Microsoft Exchange was displacing Lotus Notes at the time, and email was sort of, you know, people didn't have email in business as a pervasive technology, right? So I've seen sort of the internet come, I've seen mobile come, I've seen cloud come. The reality is that all of those technologies pale into insignificant to what this is going to enable, but they've all been enabling technologies that have allowed this to happen. Because without the pooling of the data, without the cloud processing technologies, et cetera, we wouldn't be at this stage. So they were all necessary to get to this point. But I think the changes we're going to see in the next 3 years will be like nothing else that we've seen in business.
Yeah, I remember the days when email first came into a business, we were all very excited and started just emailing each other in the office just to be able to do it. It was just incredible. But as you rightly say, the advances that we've seen in the last 2 years, and who knows what this next 2 or 3 years will bring. Is it fair to say, there's sort of a double-edged question here, or is it fair to say that if AI unchecked, that it's inherently biased, is one part of the question. Then the follow-up to that is, how does a company protect against these AI biases?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And, you know, we see the models themselves have been fine-tuned, these big models owned by these big businesses, to the biases that are acceptable to those big businesses, right? And we see right-wing and extreme left-wing views that suggest that these models are, you know, biased in a very evil way, right? Because now in the world, nothing is, it's either black or white. That where we used to have, I think, I always say that the best politics happens in the gray space between the extremes. But of course, the algorithms that exist within the social media platforms only feed us what we want to hear. So they actually make it more black or white because of the way that those algorithms work. So in some ways, the AI models could be used as a way to actually avoid some of that. So for example, you could create an agent that could look out at the web, and rather than you being fed the articles that the social media platforms want to feed you, you could ask the agent to give you the articles that you want and for it to effectively be your filter on the internet and give you that back with a less biased view, if you like, as well. So they have the potential to actually unbias the internet, which in some ways is being highly biased by these algorithms that exist in the big tech businesses that are constantly reinforcing what we want to hear. And I think, again, you know, traditional news and newspapers when I was growing up gave a very biased, unbiased opinion. News was not entertainment, it was news. Whereas now, with a lot of the new networks and things, news has become entertainment. Opinion has become, you know, the flavor of the day, when in actual fact, you know, I think those things were probably better left to individual conversations around the dinner table. Let news people provide you with the information and let you make more of those conclusions for yourself.
Yeah, I agree. Everyone has an opinion, and people love to have their opinions and get their likes and shares and all of the rest of it up. And a lot of what we're hearing out there is exactly that. It's just opinion. And so it's, do you think that the tool can help combat that then?
I believe it can. It has Like all tools, they can be used for good or evil, right? I can guarantee you somewhere around there will be some criminal using an Excel spreadsheet to track, you know, what they're doing in the world, right? And there's also a lot of Excel spreadsheets used in business to do a lot of good and in charities and all the rest of it. In the same way, AI can absolutely be used for good or evil, right? And we know that, you know, some of the models in the open source community now have started to be used by the dark web, et cetera, et cetera. Ultimately, I think that these tools can be a way of giving you more control over what you choose to consume and how you choose to consume it. And I think within the next 2 to 3 years, we're going to see every person will have their own agent that is doing work for them, looking over their shoulder, helping them do their day-to-day work, right? And I don't know whether you saw the Rabbit device that was out a few months back, but you know, this device could effectively look at the screen that you were working on and then help make decisions. Now, if we think about the technologies that Apple have with their device and their Shortcuts app, which can do all sorts of automation in the phone, it wouldn't surprise me if we saw in the next version of iOS something where Siri is the beginning of that kind of assistant, right? And we're already seeing it with Copilot with Microsoft, my old employers. So I think that there is a lot of opportunity for these things to do really great work and be helpers. And actually, you know, at Jam7, we talk about the sort of jam on top. So the AI model on its own is not, at least right now, it's not going to be able to do all of this on its own. It needs the input of human guidance. And there was a really interesting Harvard Business Review study where they looked at the output of Boston Consulting Group consultants and compared it to the output of ChatGPT 4.0. And what it showed was that the results that you got from ChatGPT were generally of a higher quality than the ones you got from the £5,000 a day consultant, right? And so one you're paying £20 a month for, and the other one you're paying £5,000 a day for, right? That's kind of quite eye-opening when you think about it in terms of how that happens. But what the study found was it still needed that human to be involved in the loop in order for that massive improvement in the way for those things to be done. And also, of course, it requires people to know the right questions to ask the model at the beginning of the process. So if you don't have the experience or the knowledge, you're not necessarily going to get better answers out of the model if you don't know the right questions to ask as well. So again, it's about, I think, recognizing how these things play together. And I think if we look back at a period in history where this is probably similar, it's a little bit like the Renaissance, right? When you think about the Renaissance period, there was the cultures of art and science coming together, which ultimately resulted in a real sort of explosion of discovery. And I think we're going to see similar things with these models where they are, you know, learning now about all sorts of different sciences and technologies. And you can ask these questions of the models and you know, they kind of can see patterns that we don't see unless we're, because a lot of scientists are specialists in individual areas, for example.
And it, just touching back, because you mentioned the very start, excuse me, diversity and inclusion, which is a world that I've got a particular interest in, especially neurodiversity. And obviously I'm in recruitment. So how, in your opinion, how do you think AI can improve the job application process and maybe open it up to a wider community? Because I know autism particularly, you know, there's a very low employment rate ratio within the autistic community. And I think my hope is that AI can maybe help improve and open up a wider community to have accessibility to the job market. Do you feel the same, or
I mean, so my partner actually has Asperger's and is an amazing pianist. So I know firsthand how challenging that that job market can be. Luckily, as a teacher of music, they're sort of self-employed. They don't have to deal with some of those challenges that you're outlining there. I think that ultimately, it's about recognizing that from diversity comes different outlooks and ideas, right? And business is increasingly about the creativity. If you try and do everything the same as everybody else, you just become the same as everybody else, right? And the only way you can compete on that basis is cost. And ultimately, unless you're a low-cost provider in the market you operate, which means everything you do is about minimizing cost, and there are many good businesses that have done this, Southwest Airlines being obviously the case study, but there are many others where everything is about minimizing cost, you don't want to be in the market of just discounting, right? Discounting is a race to the bottom. It's where there is the lowest amount of profit, and it's not going to help. So you need that diversity of opinion when you're doing your planning, when you're building your products, when you're thinking about your marketing, to get as many different ideas into the melting pot as possible. And I think, I've worked slightly on a tangent. I've worked with neurodiverse people on the programming side who are truly 10x more productive than the non-autistic development people, right? Because they obsess about the details. You know, my partner can play the same piece of music for 12 hours over and over again until it is, you know, note perfect. And in the same way, developers who are really brilliant in that field can truly be 10x more productive. And it always amuses me with, you know, chief technology officers and people are, you know, well, we want, you know, really low cost development staff. We're going to outsource everything over here, blah, blah, blah. It's like, this is the one area where you want the very best, because actually you want as few developers as possible that are as highly skilled as possible, because as you add more people into the development team, the productivity decreases through the nature of intercommunication. And, you know, this is why agile teams work better than waterfall in various capacities, at least in some development requirements. But I think that the value that these neurodiverse people can bring to an organization is huge. And I think that AI can probably help with them being empowered with a new set of tools that allow them to express themselves in a more full way, right? Because from a written perspective, they can engage with the model, they can get their idea written out in a way that's probably more conventional, which means that their style of communication, which might be quite blunt, might rub people up the wrong way, that can be smoothed out by the model being used to interpret some of those things. So I think absolutely they can be empowering for helping people to understand those options. And I think in a world where people are working more from home and less in an office environment, yet again, those neurodiverse people should be considered more in that working from home environment, where they're not going to be stressed by being in an office with a lot of noise and people and opinions. They can work from home, be very active contributors to the job market, and add a considerable amount of value, and recognize that they can be in their own environment where they're not going to be triggered or caused, you know, huge amounts of anxiety.
No, I agree. That's you give me hope for the future, which is fantastic. Conversations with our clients, what we're seeing is they seem to indicate anyway that the moving from ideation or great idea into a meaningful AI product is a difficult journey. What can organizations do to improve this? I know you're working with organizations at Jam7 there to help them on that journey, but what are the sort of key areas they need to look at to make an idea an actual reality? And what are the sort of tests? I know I've asked a lot of questions in that one question, but how do we improve it?
Yeah. Well, I think product management is one answer to that, right? I mean, I'm biased. I've been either a product manager or a product marketing manager most of my working life, but I think a lot of product managers are not well understood in the business. They're often not empowered. And I see a lot of startup businesses hiring chief product officers when there are only 10 people in the business. And you're like, well, wait a minute, the CEO is the chief product officer at that point, right? It's their vision, it's their product. Why are you hiring a senior product person to come in? And, you know, they can't do that job for you because this is your baby, right? So I think first and foremost, there's a recognition that the role of product management is different at different life cycle stages within an organization. And in the true early startup, it's all about, you know, talking with the customer, the continuous discovery process. And, you know, I always say the difference between a good product manager and a great product manager is that a great product manager spends 20% of their time, one day a week, 8 hours, communicating with prospects and customers. And I can tell a great product manager because they will have every single week, 8 hours worth of customer or prospect interviews in their diary, and they're constantly communicating with them. And that for me is one of the huge differentiators. And in the world of AI, we're seeing a lot of new products coming along where, you know, people have got great ideas for how AI can be used. And the key thing that you've got to consider with those things, working with either the founder of the business, if it's a very small business, or the product team, if it's in a more mature state, is figuring out how all of those pieces come to play to actually understand what the pains, gains, and jobs to be done for the customer are. And at Jam7, we talk about this idea of validating the market, product market fit. You see it all the time. And you see a lot of these businesses, some of which have been backed by Series A and B rounds, where they're still searching for product market fit. And, it's always eye-opening to me when you look at a business and you look at, you know, do they have clarity of the target customer group? Do they understand the pains, gains, and jobs to be done? Have they defined the buyer persona and user personas? And do they truly recognize that they're two different groups? Because so often I speak to customers where they haven't clearly understood that they're different, right? And that can be a huge misstep in the process of really getting your head around what your buyers and your users need. And then, of course, the other thing is that the pirate metrics, which any good startup person knows about and most good product managers know about, which is the R, which is, I'm going to get these wrong now probably, but it's awareness, activation, retention, revenue, referral. I think I've got those right. But basically, you know, understanding that each of those are interconnected, and you can't get revenue until you've got activated users, right? And yet the finance people in a business would be like, well, the hockey stick said we were going to have all this revenue. And I'm like, yeah, well, you're never going to get that until you've got some active users that love the product, who are out there waving the flag about it, right? So again, I think, you know, books like The Lean Startup, books like The Startup Owner's Manual, which was Eric Ries's Princeton professor, Steve Blank. A lot of his ideas came from that book. And The Startup Owner's Manual, for anybody that's considering a startup, is in a startup, if they haven't read that book, that is, for me, a must read book. And it really helps with all of that understanding around how these things all interplay, and the things you need to consider at every step in order to validate product market fit, and then ultimately make sure that you're able to deliver a great product that customers love and are willing to talk about to their friends and colleagues, because that's the ultimate measure of whether your product is a good fit for the market or not.
And whether it's AR or not is irrelevant. The same process must be followed, I think. It's
same process. I mean, I think, again, pains, gains, and jobs to be done. I think you see a lot of AI startups at the moment that are just using the technology because it's there, but they haven't really nailed what problem is this trying to fix. And more importantly, what product am I displacing by introducing this? Because unfortunately, we are all, we all fall back into our own behaviors, right? I am I've been using AI now for three and a bit years. But I find sometimes I've suddenly written something or done something and I'm like, wait a minute, I could have done that much better and much faster, but I just fell back into my old way of working. So I think that, again, a lot of product people, a lot of people building new products, you know, I in my consulting around product and validating products with people, I often, you know, look at them and say, oh, you built a task list. Great. You know, the world needs one more task list in more product, right? I mean, how many task lists do we all need in our world? And why am I going to use your task list in your product rather than another task list in another product? And unless you can answer that question, you back into that world of building features for the sake of it without having a good understanding of why the customer is going to use your feature over how they've already solved that problem somewhere else. And you've got to have those answers before you go and build it. There's no point, you know, otherwise you end up with what I used to describe as product vomit, you know, so many features all over the place that the poor customer is left sort of scratching their head as to how this all fits together for them. I could mention a couple of products, but I won't mention any.
I'll go on, not at all. So, Jason, you've recently released an article about human-centric B2B and the art of storytelling. How does AI fit into that, or does it indeed?
Yeah, so one of my final roles at Travelport was this grandiose title of chief storyteller, where I used to be responsible for the company's overall narrative. And I got a lot of ideas in that role from a guy called Steve Clayton, who was at Microsoft when I was there, who also held that title at Microsoft. I used a lot of techniques over my time to kind of understand how to get people to believe in a story, how to sort of truly buy into a brand, whether that's a product narrative around a product or you know, set of features, or whether it's the company and the vision, etc. And one of the common techniques around that is the 7-point story arc, or the hero's journey. And those are both very pervasive in most Hollywood films. If you see them, everything from Star Wars through to most of the Superman films, you know, it starts out with the sort of downtrodden person that's feeling underwhelmed. You know, there's some kind of mentor that helps them through something. They become transformed, powerful, and at the end of it, they've, you know, averted disaster, and they're this new sort of stronger version of themselves. Well, in reality, that's the same journey you want to take your customers on if you're in sales, right? Somebody has got a problem, they don't know about your product, you're there to help inform them and help them become, you know, empowered through that process, et cetera, et cetera. So building an effective narrative is really about, you know, understanding those things, being authentic and being truthful. I think in today's world, BS, but without abbreviating it, has been dialed up to a level, whether it's through, you know, politics or whatever, where, you know, honesty now feels like a sort of, you know, something that most people don't believe in, right? Whether it's you're the leader in your field and yet you're a small business and you're not the leader, right? But everybody claims it. I mean, how many of those things, you know, we are the leaders in blah, blah, blah. And I read them and I smile because, you know, you can't all be the leader in that thing. And having worked in some businesses that truly were leaders in things, I always see it and I just think it sets the narrative up to be non-truthful from the very beginning, right? And there is a difference between telling a great story and spinning a great story and sort of creating falsities around it. And what people are looking for increasingly in today's world is honest, authentic stories, people that are willing to say, well, actually, my product isn't a good fit for you for these reasons, or my business isn't a good fit for you because culturally we don't work well together. We have different views of the world, right? And so I think that AI has a place to play in this, bringing it back to your original question, because AI can help everybody be a better communicator. It can help you formulate your ideas. You know, if you use ChatGPT and other large language models are available, so I'm not calling out anybody here particularly, but you can turn on the phone version of that and have a conversation with it in the car. And all of that is transcribed while you're having that conversation, right? So you can brainstorm ideas, you have a natural language conversation with the model, and when you get back to the office, you can look at all of that and you can start to use that to help formulate your ideas, work out where you might use that appropriately. You might then choose to ask it to summarize some of that. You may then prompt that with something, and you might come up with something that's going to be a really piece of compelling narrative. And if you tell it that you want it to help create a storytelling narrative around that, and you tell it what a storytelling narrative is and reference the appropriate thing that you want it to use, and I think it's Dan Welsh, but I may have got that name wrong, where the 7-point story arc comes from originally, it will take all of that information and create better output for you. So, you know, ultimately, I think it does have a very important place to play, especially for dyslexic people like myself, who maybe don't feel, you know, I feel I'm a great communicator in this kind of forum, but if this was in a written forum, I wouldn't feel anywhere near as confident as I do when I'm talking to somebody about something. But with AI, I feel that I do have that capability. And so the article that I recently wrote was all about the idea of using storytelling in a business context and figuring out how in an AI world where more of this content will be co-authored with individuals, I think it has a place to play, but yet again, honesty and truthfulness are more important now than ever. And especially with deep fakes and all the rest of it, you know, AI can be used to make it, to obfuscate the truth even more. If you use it to actually amplify the truth, I think it can be an extraordinarily strong vehicle for authentic storytelling.
That has been superb. Jason, it's been an absolute delight speaking with you today. I really appreciate you giving me some time. If people want to find you, what's the best way to do it? Is to via LinkedIn, Jason Nash, look you up there, or is it to go to the website?
Yeah, you can find me on Jason Nash at LinkedIn, but also our email address is just as simply jam7.com. And on there, you can find a meeting link where you can book time with me directly to discuss anything with me. Always happy to share some thoughts and ideas with clients on what they're doing and how we can help them. But yeah, I'm super delighted to have the opportunity to chat with you today.
Well, thank you so much, and I hope we get to speak again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode from the Talent Smart podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. We're always keen to hear your feedback. Please let us know your thoughts and what episodes and what topics you'd like to hear us cover in the future. Our intention in each episode is to interview interesting and inspiring people who offer their insights into their areas of expertise. We're keen to hear from you. Please let us know your thoughts and if you'd like to take part in future episodes.